Hello, everyone. My name's Chuck Pozeski. I'm a professor at Washington State University in mechanical engineering, and I actually look at the social physics of sentience and how human communities generate knowledge. That's my research area. And I write about these issues on my blog, empathy.guru. One of the big things that is in the focus in the news lately has been, of course, the behavior of Donald Trump and authoritarianism in general. So I thought I'd like to generate a deeper understanding of how all this authoritarian stuff works so that you can take these principles and see that it's actually not just about Donald Trump. These kinds of behaviors and what I call value memes, term coined by Don Beck, one of the fathers of spiral dynamics, if you want to look that up, actually functions. So the goal today is to get a deeper understanding of this. And it's going to be a pretty different podcast from what you might be used to, because one of the things that I try to look at is what are the deeper information physics that govern how authoritarianism actually works. And where this is relevant, of course, is with the whole debate about alternate facts and a post-truth world. That was my last podcast. So here's a little bit more background information on kind of how authoritarianism works. So what is authoritarianism? Well, let me tell you, it's a loaded word. The minute that you say it, of course, then, you know, you have some idea of bossy behavior, persecutorial, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't really want to argue about that per se. What I'd rather talk about is that it's actually a social structure. And what makes authoritarianism different and at some level interesting is that it processes knowledge in a peculiar way. The first characteristic of authoritarian systems is that they're low empathy. I mean, and what that means is that they're really pretty profound in-group, out-group in the dynamics. So if you're in the in-group, things are actually probably pretty good. And, you know, because authoritarian systems will typically tend to take care of their own. But if you're in the out-group, then things aren't so good. And if you're in that out-group, then, you know, you see kind of common manifestations of authoritarian systems, which is racism or ethnocentrism. You know, there's certainly extreme examples of this kind of behavior in the historic past. I'm not even going to bring them up. You know what they are, because it's a distortionate image. Lots and lots of societies in today's world are authoritarian. They are not all extreme or collapsed authoritarian systems, but they have these things in common. The second characteristic of an authoritarian system is that they tend to be very, very status-driven. So what that means is that where you rank in the system, which is determined by the people above you, directly relates to the privileges that you get to have in a given society. And the thing that's interesting about status in general that we don't like to think is that status is actually an arbitrary concept. Why does somebody want to own a Louis Vuitton purse? I was looking at the prices of these last night. There's something like $2,000 for a given purse. And if you were more of a performance or goal-driven person, a bag from Safeway would have basically the same functionality as most Louis Vuitton bags. Yet the bag from Safeway, let's say a cloth bag, is going to cost you $1, $1.50. A Louis Vuitton bag is going to cost you $2,000. So why are you willing to pay that? Well, because at some level that is a sign or a marker or a resonator of power and privilege of your position. And, you know, there are aesthetic things involved, but mostly it's also because somebody else has decided that that's a beautiful looking bag. So it probably has some intrinsic qualities. No question, Louis Vuitton purses are made of leather and they're handmade and they're sewed very nicely. But really, somebody else decides that that's the way to look. And status-driven thinking is everywhere in our society. Why would you want to wear a big rock on your finger and say that professes your husband's true love for you? I mean, That's a result of the De Beers Corporation marketing over generations. Why would you care if your diamond came from a mine or was synthesized now in a laboratory? Well, once again, that's an arbitrary thing that basically is a reflection of a position of authority. So the other thing that authoritarian systems work on is they're basically about power and control. And they are fundamentally egocentric in the way that that works. So the leader, of course, is the highest egocentric entity that has to be catered to. But as you go down, once again, it's filled with mostly selfish motives. And the reason it is because when you have a low empathy system, which dictates the connectivity, then there are very, very few people that you actually get to connect to. So it's very, very challenging to care about other people outside of that. Certainly, top-down systems are often egocentric. There's little bottom-up feedback. So basically, the authority creates the truth. And this is a key element here, is that the authority creates the truth and then spreads the truth down through the system. So if you're at the bottom and you say, well, that doesn't work, well, your status is low. And if it doesn't work, it's your problem. You just have to work it out. Last time we talked about Conway's Law, which basically said that the social structure of a system maps to the knowledge structure. This really is important with authoritarian systems because what we end up with is the only knowledge systems that are available to us are knowledge fragments and mythic stories. Now, mythic stories actually come from below the authoritarian value meme. In the tribal value meme of how we came about. And we hear lots and lots of mythic stories about the creation, for example, of the United States right now, various things about it being a Christian nation, when actually the historical record is very clear that at best the founding fathers were deists, and they were actually very, very suspicious of all sorts of dominant religions at the time. But nonetheless, I mean, Christian doesn't mean Catholic. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But nonetheless, this is part of our mythic origination story, right? The other part is knowledge fragments. And we've really seen this in play since Donald Trump has been president, that basically there are just facts that are thrown out there. And these facts are true to Donald Trump's perspective. But when you actually try to ground these facts in larger truths, you have a really difficult time. Now, here's the thing in an authoritarian system is that basically, because of their power and control, they work on depressing lower level populations. The way a system that's authoritarian works is making everybody depressed. You feed them simple facts, and then what that does is it makes them easier to control. The other thing is that, you know, in that context of how you arrange things, authoritarians get to arrange the nodes below them as they wish. So that's another powerful thing that keeps you in check, knowing that your status and your well-being in society is directly connected to what somebody's opinion above you thinks. Because knowledge is created in the minds of the authorities, larger unknowns are not popular. So if you stand up in a meeting of authoritarians and you say, well, I don't know, I can tell you, as an academic pretty much my whole career, your status goes down. And what that does is actually kind of corrupting, because when you can't admit that you don't know, your world starts shrinking. And it also cuts out avenues for exploration, which add gaining knowledge and also grounding whatever larger truths and pieces of knowledge that you have to an external system. So it's very good as far as what's called reliability, which is that the same stuff gets repeated over and over again in a very, very predictable, repeatable fashion. But it turns out to be terrible for validity, and the idea behind validity is something true in a larger sense. So authoritarian systems are really great at reliability, saying the same thing over and over again. But once again, they're very, very poor at grounding that information in the outside world, and that can lead to dramatic consequences. One of the interesting things that I talk about in my empathetic writing is the idea that empathy actually creates timescales in your head and the ability to have consequential thinking, which is actually something that comes straight out of Don Beck. So authoritarian systems mostly work in the limbic mind, where the authority above gets to make the decision, and then everybody else basically down the rest of the authority cascade has to accept it. So timescales are short. When timescales are short, then consequential thinking suffers because no one's going to question inside the network whether the boss is right or wrong. And that also adds to a devolution of the ability to process more complex knowledge. If you're afraid to talk back to your boss, you can expect that the decisions in any given organization will become more impulsive. That sets up very, very interesting strategic questions about how long authoritarian systems last, as well as how fragile they are relative to the outside world. And one of the things that one can see is that they are very much subject to rapid collapse from interactions with other systems. The greatest example I can think of is the Aztecs and the Spaniards. So the Aztecs were definitely in a very, very sophisticated, but nonetheless very low value meme state of basically a mix of tribal, magical, and authoritarian systems. And it got to the point where the Aztecs were sacrificing, depending on who you read, somewhere between 4,000 and 40,000 people a year, cutting their hearts out on the various pyramids to make sure the sun would come up. So that made perfect sense to the people in the Aztec government to cut all those people's hearts out. I mean, they had convinced themselves that that was the truth, and everybody was afraid to not do it, believing that the sun wouldn't come up. But in the reality, they had to get those people from somewhere, and they got a lot of them from surrounding tribes. And, you know, people don't take too kindly to having their cousins' hearts cut out to have the sun come up. So what happened was a small group of Spaniards showed up, and of course, lots of very, very intelligent and intuitive books have been written about this, Jared Diamond, Guns, Germs, and Steel, with a very, very different set of realities and also a very much a legalistic, absolutistic God and technology, you know, the technology of religion with sophisticated clerics and so on and so forth. And in no time at all, the Aztec Empire was devastated. And what followed was a great deal of suffering for all the people involved. And of course, La Leyenda Negra and the miscegenation of the Aztec race by the Spaniards, which then created an entirely new country. One of the things that's often neglected in the story of how the Spaniards beat the Aztecs were the alliances that the Spaniards made with the tribes who were surrounding the country who had been the source of all these sacrifices. Obviously, this outgroup was very, very motivated to see the Aztec Empire fall apart. And so when the Spaniards came as a disruptive force, then that outgroup pressure was a key contributor to destroying the Aztec Empire. So being a low empathy system actually has profound consequences as far as how you continue to survive as a nation. So there's two more things here that are characteristic of authoritarian systems. One is that authoritarians typically are very, very bad in understanding different motives. And so the only motives that they can really access are motives from their own motive set. And what that means is that if you're egocentric, then basically you're going to project egocentric behavior on other people that you have conflict with. So you're going to say things like, well, you know, that other person, they're only doing it for themselves. You know, they don't really have any higher goal or justification because If you can't understand consequential behavior, it's very difficult to see that somebody else in another situation might have consequential behavior. And then, of course, there's very, very little self-reflection, because down the authority chain, you're not supposed to self-reflect. You're supposed to do what the boss says. And so what that means is that there's very poor development of wisdom. In fact, there's almost no wisdom in the system other than what's deep inculcated from past mega traumas. So it's really kind of interesting in this day and age, because we have this chief advisor to Donald Trump, Steve Bannon, and what a surprise. Steve Bannon is insisting that the only way that our society moves forward is with megatrauma in an 80-year cycle. And this kind of thing, once you understand it, you realize how stupid so much of what comes out of these people's mouths are, because they have no perspective to couch their inherent impulsive thoughts in the larger context of knowledge. And they're ruled by the impulsive limbic brain, so we don't have a lot of cognitive processing. You know, people are either good or bad. You know, there's the fake news, the false press. And over time, this really creates kind of an interesting thing, what I call, in any authoritarian power structure, what happens is the system itself becomes shrink-wrapped. So I call it authoritarian shrink-wrapping in its own knowledge. That means the only suitable and knowledge that we're allowed to access is already inside, because knowledge on the outside comes from out-groups and is always perceived as a threat. So it's just rejected. And what happens is, of course, is that any system with these kinds of motivations, and it's not just our current government administration that has these problems. I see this in academia all the time, is we end up with what we in engineering parlance called a floating ground system, where we ground it relative to what the authority thinks, not what reality actually is. And this is very, very much anathema for long-term robust success. So authoritarianism in today's world exists in a modern context that sits in the middle of the internet, which is this huge grounding, regrounding process that's going on all the time. It's not the same as authoritarianism of 70 or 80 years ago with the Nazis and Stalin. There's no way an authoritarian can maintain that level of information control anymore, and we've seen this around the world. So we have to try to understand what it means in a modern context. Well, okay, to start off, it's still very, 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 very conflict. It's conflict-oriented, is because the authority gets to decide what's right and wrong. And so that means the dynamics in the social system are fundamentally what we call dichotomous. There are two paths out of any situation. And those often are either you're for us in the in-group or you're against us, you're in the out-group. And because of that dichotomous two-way thinking, then conflict resolution doesn't become a process of negotiation and compromise. It actually is either win, lose, or both sides fall away in exhaustion. And so that's a huge problem in modern society, because issues are complex. I mean, there is no single, for example, I've been writing about the EPA lately because it's very interesting to me. You know, the EPA definitely, at some level, some might say, was a liberal victory, that we're going to protect the environment. But it was also an evolutionary victory, in that basically there had been all sorts of issues that fell under what's called nuisance law, where how you got to use your property depended on how you affected your neighbor, ended up getting resolved with those laws in the 60s and 70s as our society became more complex. What happened was we moved up the societal evolutionary scale so that people, you know, had more fairness and everybody's overall rights were optimized as opposed to just one or the other. Larger effects were taken into account, so on and so forth. But that doesn't work in the idea of egocentric conflict resolution. I mean, when you have egocentric conflict resolution, your rights are the only ones that matter. And so that basically is the undergirding of a lot of the authoritarian thought that we see today. And when you couple this with real collapsed authoritarian egocentric thought, then the only real outgroup becomes the government, we. And then basically it's, you don't want to be interested in understanding or connecting to the government. The government is the outgroup in your system, and you have no interest in understanding your outgroup at all. And so therefore, the only solution that you end up with out of this kind of mindset is that the government has to be destroyed, because it is something that is profoundly against your interests, because you are the only one that's capable of deciding what your interests are. So coordination goes out the window. Modern-day authoritarians can use what we call empathetic mirroring to reflect down lots and lots of more complex knowledge structures, but they're still going to be dominated by the desire to use those more complex forms for power and control. And this is a really key idea here, that lower value memes like authoritarianism will go and borrow higher behaviors to establish power and control. Let me give you an example. So in the university, let's talk about, you know, performance of a university professor, okay? So we have performance metrics, and they're a mix of performance-based thinking and algorithmic processes, which are the two evolutionary stages above authoritarianism. So those are legalistic algorithmic processes, performance-based thinking. You know, we calculate, you know, what somebody's performance score is subject to an algorithm, okay? And supposedly that's going to tell us what their actual performance is. And the authorities will declare these as accurate measurements of performance. But the level of reality is highly variable. If you ask somebody what the guiding principle of a university would be in society, people would likely say to make our state or our nation a better place, you know, and to educate students, raise the level of knowledge and information in society. All these things are large goals of the university. Defend scholarly publication too, but a lot of those are hidden and not even necessarily discussed by the various powers that be on why. You know, like, for example, one of the reasons to write a paper is it's a great personal reflection on your work. It might archive an idea that there's powerful latency, that the idea isn't relevant right now, but 20 years later it might be. But this is not really the dominant thinking behind justifying what we do. So at any rate, I have a fancy term that I use for this borrowing of more complex and actually more complex empathetic behaviors by authoritarian systems, and I call it V-meme down selection. Where basically you're borrowing from more complex processes to assert authority. And this is a really powerful technique when coupled with an institution. Okay, so what we've been dealing with lately with the Trump administration is what I call a collapsed authoritarian system. It really exists only to service itself. I mean, one of the interesting things about listening to Donald Trump talk is that he's really honest about this. I mean, he's defined himself as basically his job is to perpetuate the Republican Party. There's very little, and by definition in his head, perpetuating the Republican Party is inherently good. And the ideas that the Republican Party has are inherently good. So it's one of the interesting kind of cart following the horse thing that you know, the idea behind a government is at some modest level to service the well-being of the society that it protects. And the idea is the United States is a society, it's a nation, it has interests, and that government should look out for the interests of the United States. But when you decide that, you know, a good 50% of the population doesn't have any good ideas, then you immediately start getting You know, and the reason that they don't have good ideas is because they have a particular label on them. Then you start really getting into a very bad spiral as far as understanding the dynamics of collective intelligence in the community. You know, as you know, Donald Trump is a collapsed narcissist, as I've covered before. I mean, it's an interesting thing. So, you know, one of the facts of this is that a collapsed narcissist does have kind of, you know, what people might call a superpower of reflective mirroring. And so basically they're going to pull opportunistically from all sorts of sources. Now, an interesting thing came rolling through my system today. I saw something on Breitbart, which is kind of the radical right news source that Steve Bannon, the chief advisor to Trump, had started a while ago, saying that Trump had fixed the Flint water crisis. And the Flint water crisis, Flint, Michigan, has a contaminated water system. There's a long story. There's a whole podcast just on how that got to be. It's a transitional system, and there are lead in the water, and kids can't drink the water, and they can't get bathed because of fecal coliform bacteria in the water. And Breitbart announced that Trump had given Flint $100 million. The Trump EPA had given Flint $100 million. And so if you were just to read the comments, which were very, very selectively edited, then you would not know that the true backstory was that it was an emergency situation that the Obama administration had pressed for, you know, in my opinion, not as hard as they should have, but finally there was an emergency appropriation by Congress that Obama signed in December to help fix the Flint situation of $100 million. So there was nothing in the Breitbart article that was particularly false. Yes, indeed, the Trump administration basically released the check, but the check was produced back in the Obama administration. So there's a reconstruction of reality which basically serves the needs of the Trump administration as projecting out that it cares about people and so on and so forth. But it doesn't match with a grounded historical record of what happened. So there are these artifacts that happen in these systems. And, you know, one is this inherent intuitive realization that other social networks are a threat to their power and control. So even with this story, you know, by attempting to take credit, you know, once again, the Trump administration is projecting itself as, or rather Breitbart is projecting it for the Trump administration that, you know, they're a force of good in the world and the other people didn't do anything. And so therefore they're evil. There's a psychological term for this. It's called splitting, where either everybody's either really, really pro or against. And it basically, it's designed to sow relational disruption through projection of gray areas in your thinking. So the situation's actually complex. You know, in my opinion, my personal opinion, Obama didn't act fast enough, but he did do something. And the it's far more complicated because of the distress and division in Congress. They didn't get money promoted. But if you read this piece in Breitbart, it wipes away all that gray area and it gives the credit to Trump. And then lastly, there's the more insidious stuff, which is gaslighting, which is actually a long podcast in itself about the psychological distortion of reality, trying to make people think something that isn't necessarily true is true in the attempt to gain power and control and make them think they're crazy. It might be fair actually to say that the Flint, Michigan story and Breitbart is a form of gaslighting, since its intent is, of course, to transfer credit to the Trump administration. By my standards, though, it would be relatively modest form of gaslighting, though. It's difficult sometimes to figure these things out because they're designed to be difficult. You know, when you have something like gaslighting, which is, you know, a standard tool of collapsed authoritarian systems, you know, that psychological distortion of reality, it's really difficult to figure out what the truth is. I mean, take the Muslim immigration situation that we have. The reality is there has been no terrorist attacks Yet one could very, very succinctly argue that there is a problem. Immigration is always a challenge for civilized societies to figure out. How do you figure it out? On and on and on. Not easy. And how do you become data-driven and then really think about that? So one of the key things I'm going to wrap up with is, how do we understand the difference between authoritarianism from collapsed authoritarianism, which is more what we're having right now? And I think a key element is actually, if the collapsed authoritarian system is sowing relational disruption as a goal of the system. It's one thing to kind of be inured to whatever the effects are around your power and control, but it's something else to actively kind of go out there and sow relational disruption. And here's the challenge. When you have these kinds of systems that are behaving badly, when you think about, you know, for example, our Congress, it's easy to blame multiple actors for the problem. I mean, the Democrats have been part of the problem in Congress for a while. Republicans certainly have dominated the problems for a while. The way I like to say is, what happens when you have a hand that has a splinter in it? So if you have a hand with a splinter and you pull out the splinter, all of a sudden the hand feels comfortable. If the splinter's in the hand swells up and, you know, it shows many, many problems. So can you determine in your, as you parse these things, who's the splinter in the hand? And so I think that that's kind of the key thing. It's like you're going out, you try to figure out a relational disruption from an authoritarian system. What would happen if that person's removed? And then you start getting the idea of actually who the bad causal actors are inside the system. Okay, there's a ton of information in the podcast today. Let's just try to review a couple of the big concepts. One is that authoritarian systems are really about how information is moved around in that system. And while somebody gets to be the boss, what they really do is kind of create passivity in the people who are beneath the boss. So they're low responsibility systems, low empathy systems, status driven, which means that they're fundamentally arbitrary, and they're really about power control and egocentricity. They're not run out of the prefrontal cortex typically. I mean, there are definitely some scheming and stuff that happens, but a lot of it comes out of the impulsive limbic brain, and the thinking time scales are very, very short. When you have an authoritarian system, it has an anathema to new information, and what happens over time is you end up with what I've called authoritarian shrink wrapping, where basically you end up with an inability to process new information. So they might be fine as long as the world's staying the same, but the minute that the world starts changing, authoritarian systems are fundamentally threatened. They're very conflict-oriented. It's either for us or against us, and it's still winner or loser, and even the idea of negotiation, which is really multi-solution thinking, is not a popular thing. Collapsed authoritarian systems are the worst because basically they're not even interested in just maintaining power and control. They're interested in relational disruption and devolution of the society. And the way that they do that is, of course, through maintaining that hegemony over what the truth is. We've seen a lot of that from the Trump administration. How do you tell who the bad actors are? If you have a splinter in the hand, you know, it might be easy to blame the fingers because the fingers hurt, but the reality is you've got to find the splinter. And then once you find who the relational disruptor is, once you remove that individual, then it's more likely for the hand to return back to some kind of homeostasis. Authoritarian systems are low empathy, focused mostly on mirroring behavior, which means that the people down through the system will reflect on what the person or the people at the top of the system do and create that behavior. So they're very, very key to whoever the personality is at the top of the system, which then becomes really important in understanding them. That's a ton of stuff. Hope you've enjoyed cogitating over some of it. Check out my blog, empathy.guru. I will have some links on the bottom of the web page that can take you to other more extensive reasoned arguments about how authoritarianism works. Thanks. Until next time.